Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Alice Bryant. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
A new study suggests the sun appears to experience far fewer changes in brightness and intensity than other stars like it. Researchers reported last week on their examination of 369 stars. They compared each one to the sun in terms of surface temperature, size, and rotation. They found that on average, the other stars had 5 times more brightness variability than our sun. A report on the study and its findings was published in Science magazine. The lead author was Timo Reinholdt, an astronomer with the Max Planck Institute for Solar System Research in Germany. He told the Reuters news agency that the variability in brightness results from dark spots on the surface of the star moving in and out of view. A direct measure of solar activity is the number of sunspots on the surface, Reinholdt said. Finding such stars with very similar parameters as our sun, but being 5 times more variable, was surprising. The sun, made up mainly of hydrogen and helium, is an average-sized star that formed more than 4.5 billion years ago. It stretches about 1.4 million kilometers across and has a surface temperature of 5,500 degrees Celsius. The researchers compared scientific data on the similar stars to historical records of the sun's activity. The records included about 400 years of observational data on sunspots. The researchers also studied about 9,000 years of data based on chemical element variants in tree rings and ice buildup tied to solar activity. These records show the sun has not been much more active than it is now. The researchers said increased magnetic activity related to sunspots can lead to electromagnetic events that affect Earth. For example, large releases of plasma, a collection of charged particles from outer areas of the sun's atmosphere, could cause problems for satellites and other communications equipment. Other electromagnetic activities could also result in such difficulties. The discovery that the sun does not experience as many changes as other stars may be good news for life on Earth. A much more active sun might have had more major effects on Earth's geology and ancient climate. A too active star would definitely change the conditions for life on the planet. So living with a quite boring star is not the worst option, Reinholdt said. The findings, he noted, do not rule out the possibility that the sun may be in a quiet period and could become more variable in the future. However, the researchers say there are no signs that solar activity will be increasing anytime soon. For the last decade, the sun has been showing itself to be rather weakly active, even by its own low standards, they said in a statement. Predictions of activity for the next 11 years indicate that this will not change soon. I'm Brian Lynn.
They wanted to experience college life, but their universities sent them home to learn from online classes during the coronavirus crisis. Now, students across the United States are taking legal action against over 20 colleges and universities. They want the schools to return part of the money they paid for tuition, meal plans, and housing costs. The students say they are not getting the quality of education they were promised. The cases show students' growing dissatisfaction with online courses that schools hurried to create as the coronavirus forced college campuses to close. The students say they should pay lower tuition rates for the part of the term that was offered on the internet. They argue that the quality of education is far below the classroom experience. However, college officials reject the idea that students are owed refunds. Students are learning from the same professors who teach on campus, officials say. And the students are still earning credits toward their education. Schools say that after being forced to close by their states, they are still offering students a quality education. Granger Rickenbacker is a 21-year-old student from South Carolina. He filed a class action lawsuit against Drexel University in Philadelphia. He said the online classes he has been taking are poor substitutes for classroom learning. There is little interaction with other students or professors, he said. And some classes are being taught almost entirely through pre-recorded videos with no class discussion. Other students report similar experiences. A case against the University of California, Berkeley, says some professors are only sending homework assignments with no video teaching at all. A case against Vanderbilt University in Tennessee says class discussion has been affected and the educational quality of classes has decreased. In Indiana, a Purdue University engineering student says the school's closing has prevented him from finishing his senior project, building an airplane. His complaint says no online class can reproduce the real-world experience he had hoped to gain from the project. Class action lawsuits demanding tuition refunds have been launched against at least 26 colleges, targeting private universities such as Brown, Columbia, and Cornell. Students also have brought cases against large public universities, such as Michigan State and the University of Colorado, Boulder. Some of the suits note some schools' financial holdings. They accuse schools of unfairly keeping refunds, even when the value of their endowments is often more than $1 billion. Several colleges would not comment on the cases, but some said students have continued to get what they paid for. Ken McConnellog works for the University of Colorado. He said it is disappointing that people have been so quick to take legal action only weeks into the health crisis. McConnellog told the Associated Press that professors have been working hard to provide the same high-quality education as that of the classroom. He admits that classroom and online learning are different. We all would prefer to have students on our campuses, he said, but noted we are in the middle of a worldwide health crisis. Officials at Michigan State said their students are still taking classes taught by qualified teachers. And the school is still offering learning support services, academic advising, online office hours with teachers, and library services. Emily Garrett is a Michigan State spokeswoman. She says her university has spent more money to move classes online. She added that the school has kept its promise to provide meaningful learning experiences at no additional cost to students. Officials at Drexel University said the school has continued to provide many academic offerings and support while students learn from home. Lawyers representing students, however, say the refunds are a question of fairness. Roy Wiley is a lawyer for the Anastopolo Law Firm in South Carolina, which is representing students in more than 12 cases. Wiley said his office has been contacted by hundreds of students seeking legal action, and his office is looking into several possible cases. Other law offices taking on similar cases say they are also seeing a rising demand from students and parents who say they should get refunds. Along with tuition, the cases also seek refunds for costs that students paid to use physical fitness centers, laboratories, and other buildings that are now closed. The lawsuits seek refunds that could add up to several thousand dollars per student at some schools. Lawyers are asking courts to answer a difficult question as universities move classes online. Is there a difference in value between online classes and the traditional classroom? Supporters of online education say it can be just as effective. And universities say they have done everything they can to create high-quality online classes in just a few weeks. But some of the suits say that the college experience is about more than course credits. They say there is a value to the personal interaction students get with professors and other students, both in and out of the classroom. Wiley adds that colleges themselves often charge lower costs for online classes, which he says is a sign of their value. I'm Alice Bryant.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
Freedom is on the march.
I speak not only for my candidacy, I speak for a new American century.
And America's best days are ahead of us.
Given a choice, the American people will stand where this president walks.
Every 4 years, American political parties nominate their candidates for president and vice president. In the summer of 2004, Republican Party delegates chose George W. Bush and Dick Cheney for a second 4 years in office. During President Bush's first term, Islamic extremists attacked the United States. Almost 3,000 people died in the September 11, 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center in New York City and the Pentagon across the Potomac from Washington, D.C. President Bush declared a war on terror and led the nation into wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. After the terrorist attacks, President Bush enjoyed record popularity. Public opinion studies showed that almost 90% of the American public approved of the way he was doing his job. But the president's public approval rating decreased over time. One research group found that his average approval rating for 2004 had fallen to just 50%. Before a presidential election, the main parties use primary elections and caucuses to choose delegates to a nominating meeting or convention. The person winning the most delegates usually gets the party's presidential nomination. In 2003, 10 people were seeking to become the Democratic candidate for president. Among them was John Kerry, a senator from the state of Massachusetts. Another was Howard Dean, a doctor and former governor of Vermont. There was John Edwards, a lawyer and first-term senator from North Carolina. Senator Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut also was seeking the nomination. In 2000, Senator Lieberman had been the Democratic candidate for vice president. Another senator and former senator were also seeking the nomination. So were two members of the House of Representatives, a former general, and a civil rights activist. Former Vice President Al Gore was not among the candidates. He had lost the disputed election of 2000 to George W. Bush. Mr. Gore announced he would not be a candidate in 2004.
I want my country back.
Some political observers thought Howard Dean would win the Democratic nomination. The former governor actively opposed the war in Iraq. He won praise for the way he raised money for his election campaign. Supporters gave him millions of dollars in small gifts through the internet. Then came the Iowa caucuses, the first step in the nominating process in January of 2004. John Kerry won with 38% of the state's delegates. John Edwards finished second with 32%. Howard Dean was third with just 18%. Senator Kerry continued to win delegates and gain support in other states. Several candidates, including former Governor Dean, withdrew from the campaign. In early March, Senator Edwards also withdrew. He did so after Senator Kerry won victories in 9 state caucuses and primary elections that were held on the same day. The Massachusetts senator named John Edwards as his choice for vice president. Senator Kerry officially received the Democratic Party nomination for president at the party's convention in Boston.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty. We have it in our power to change the world, but only if we're true to our ideals. And that starts by telling the truth to the American people. As president, that is my first pledge to you tonight. As president, I will restore trust and credibility to the White House.
The combination of John Kerry and John Edwards balanced the Democratic ticket in several ways. Senator Kerry was considered a liberal. He came from the Northeast. Senator Edwards was considered more moderate. He came from the South. Kerry was Roman Catholic. Edwards was Protestant. John Kerry was born in Colorado in 1943. Like George W. Bush, he studied and graduated from Yale University. He then joined the United States Navy. He was wounded in combat and won honors for his service in the Vietnam War. He criticized the war after leaving the military. John Kerry graduated from the Boston College Law School in 1976. He became a lawyer for the state government in Massachusetts. Then he served 2 years as lieutenant governor of the state. He was first elected to the Senate in 1984. His wife, Teresa Hines Kerry, led a family foundation that gives money to important causes. Senator Kerry and President Bush debated 3 times on national television. They campaigned hard across the country. Foreign policy was the major issue during the campaign. Mr. Bush centered his campaign on national security. He said he was the best candidate to keep America safe from terrorists. He said Americans could trust him to be strong against terrorism. He presented himself as a decisive leader. He said Senator Kerry had changed positions on issues and would be unsure in the face of danger. In 2002, the senator had voted to give President Bush the power to use force against Iraq. But Mr. Kerry now criticized the way the Iraqi conflict was being fought. By autumn of 2004, more than 1,000 Americans had died in Iraq since the war started in March 2003. Thousands of Iraqi civilians also had been killed. Senator Kerry talked about the war in Iraq.
You got to be able to look in the eyes of families and say to those parents, I tried to do everything in my power to prevent the loss of your son and daughter. I don't believe the United States did that, and we pushed our allies aside.
Senator Kerry said his goal for the United States was stronger at home, respected in the world. He believed that the United States had lost respect from many of its allies because of President Bush's foreign policy in Iraq. The president defended American actions in Iraq. He said the war was needed to fight terrorism. He also expressed satisfaction that because of the war effort, Iraqis were free of a cruel dictator. In the United States, economic growth had slowed before George W. Bush became president. The economy got worse after the terrorist attacks in 2001. Mr. Kerry said the economy should be expanding at a faster rate. And he denounced the growth of the national debt under Bush's leadership. The president praised his administration's actions in difficult economic times.
6 months prior to my arrival, the stock market started to go down, and it was one of the largest declines in our history. And then we had a recession, and we got attacked, which cost us 1 million jobs. But we acted. I led the Congress. We passed tax relief. And now this economy's growing. We had 1.9 million new jobs over the last 13 months.
President Bush suggested a plan for younger workers to place some of their pay in private retirement accounts. Senator Kerry opposed this idea. The president opposed most operations to end unwanted pregnancies. The senator supported a woman's right to have an abortion. His position disagreed with that of the Roman Catholic Church. Early in the campaign, opponents of John Kerry's candidacy formed a group called Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Its leader was a military veteran who, like Mr. Kerry, fought in the Vietnam War. The group argued that the senator was unfit to serve as president because of comments he made about his military service and his activism in the anti-Vietnam War movement.
John Kerry gave the enemy for free what I and many of my comrades in North Vietnam in the prison camps took torture to avoid saying.
The group even questioned the combat medals awarded to Mr. Kerry. Other Vietnam veterans, including several who had served with Kerry, denounced the charges against him as completely false. Some people believe the accusations and his campaign's delay in answering them had an important effect on the results of the election. Americans voted on November 2, 2004. As in the election of 2000, there were questions about voting problems during and after the election. The vote was especially close in the state of Ohio. Kerry supporters reported problems with voting machines. They also said many people were illegally prevented from voting. The state had enough electoral votes to decide the winner of the presidential election. But the day after the voting, Senator Kerry decided not to question President Bush's win in Ohio. The final results showed that Mr. Bush won about 51% of the popular vote nationwide. Mr. Kerry won about 48%. George W. Bush would serve 4 more years as President of the United States.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.